This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Well, we've heard a little bit today about aggressive endovascular interventions for complex tibioperitoneal disease. The field as a whole is moving in that direction, and in part because of improved techniques and improved technology, I think we're a lot more successful at getting across these things and being maybe a little bit more adventurous. Despite this, though, there still is a substantial technical failure rate, and a lot of that has to do with the anatomy of the lesion that you're dealing with. Certainly, long segment CTOs, flush occlusions, stratification occlusions, this can all be very difficult to manage. What we're going to talk about briefly is this concept of retrograde access or pedal access for getting across this. Now, I just want to reiterate that this is a salvage technique, and what I hope to convince you is that this is probably not a technique that you should be using routinely, and we'll go into the reasons and why that is. We've already heard a little bit about the poor durability of these advanced endovascular interventions, but it's worth mentioning since it's the hot topic. So it was first described by Iyer in 1990, and they had two cases of field and grade crossing of a posterior tibial lesion, and they did a open percutaneous access after a surgical cutdown. Really, they wedded the worst of both worlds. It's amazing that it actually even became popular. You had the wound complications, and combined with the limited durability of the endovascular intervention. They re-presented another case series talking about doing it again with a percutaneous approach. Here's just a little cartoon showing how you would do that to the dorsalis pedis. There since then have been a wide proliferation of techniques and variations on a theme, but the idea is you get distal access beyond the lesion, you cross the lesion retrograde. What I advocate is transferring wire control to the femoral access, performing your endovascular intervention, and then dealing with the puncture site. I'm just going to show you guys a case here in a second, but what does it add? It really adds pushability. You basically get arterial access adjacent to a lesion, lesions in the tibioperitoneal trunk and the tibials, and it gives you another opportunity at attempting salvage after a field crossing. A lot of times you can end up in a subintimal plane, and this gives you the option of re-entering or re-establishing an intraluminal position after performing a wire exchange. I'm sure everybody in this room knows somebody or has tried it themselves. It seems like it's a very common procedure. But there's not a lot published about it. There's actually fewer than 200 cases in some in the literature over the last 20 years. Some of this is driven by industry support, and the other reason is that it's a relatively inexpensive thing to do. Any 21-gauge needle in the wire will allow you to get access. And I think the other attractive thing is that in a lot of people's minds, it parallels radial access for interventional cardiology procedures, which is getting widespread adoption. But we'll see that's kind of an erroneous comparison to make. It'd be really the equivalent of puncturing the LAD to get across a coronary lesion, because usually you're doing this for limb salvage, and you can really make the situation dramatically worse if you fail to get across the lesion. So this was a case that we did, and I'm just going to briefly show it. It's these types of cases are probably best presented with video, and unfortunately we don't have video of the fluoroscopy. I think that's where most of the teachable points are, but this was a gentleman who had a composite femdistal bypass on one side and had some wound complications and cardiac complications. We had some trouble getting him through the operative period, and then in his contralateral extremity, he went on to develop gangrene of digits 3 through 5. So we were pretty committed to doing an endovascular intervention. You can see he's got chronic total occlusions of all three tibials just below the trifurcation. And then he's got portal collateralization into the foot with a patent dorsalis pedis artery, a patent plantar arch, and patent plantar medial and lateral, filling retrograde. We're just going to briefly go over how we did it, but we punctured the dorsalis pedis artery. I'll teach you guys how to convert this into a sheath. We then were able to get wire access across the lesion. We delivered the wire out the femoral sheath. And then working from within the femoral sheath, performed a long segment balloon angioplasty. This is a lateral projection here all the way down the anterior tibial, a balloon angioplasty down here to the extensor retinaculum. And then this was our completion angiogram. You can see here the anterior tibial artery opacifying nicely. This is a selective catheterization of the dorsalis pedis. We had some spasm here and infused some nitroglycerin. You can still see there's some irregularity here at the puncture site, and you're getting plantar filling. Because of that irregularity, we actually traversed the lesion and performed a low-pressure balloon angioplasty. And then after additional nitroglycerin, here's the completion angiogram of the puncture site. So this case I thought was illustrative because of the way you can manage these complications, which can be frequent. So in a little more detail now, how do we do it? I usually like to prep in anticipation of needing to do it. So what I'll do is a circumferential prep of the foot and ankle, and I'll put down a sterile half sheet on the angio table. And then I'll go on and drape with the interventional angiodrape. And that way, if you actually need the procedure, all you need to do is cut a window into the angiodrape, and then you've got a sterile foot that's exposed and doesn't need any additional prepping or draping. On-the-fly prep can be sloppy. You cut a window, you have an unsterile field, you prep, you lay down an ioband. And I really advocate using an ultrasound to do this. And when you lay down the ioband over the field, you get a lot of air that can add to artifact and makes imaging difficult. You really need image-assisted access. I think the success of this technique is contingent upon not damaging your runoff. A lot of the earlier reports were just under simple fluoroscopic guidance. Obviously, most of these patients have heavily calcified vessels to begin with that you can appreciate under fluoroscopy. They would simply catheterize or cannulate under direct fluoroscopy. Some people advocate doing an angiogram to the femoral sheath to roadmap the vessel, particularly for the perineal, or if there's less calcium, and then puncturing the vessel that way. But you can almost always use an ultrasound. It's great because you have three-dimensional imaging, and just as in femoral angiography, you can identify the correct puncture site, a soft spot, a break between the calcium that you can safely cannulate with hopes of minimizing your complication rate. And, you know, usually with an echogenic needle, you can access the vessel in a single puncture. My preference is to use a compact linear array probe, high frequency, although you can use a sonocyte. I like to use an echogenic needle. The micropuncture kit is nice because you can apply a check flow valve and then have a sidearm and a sheath that you can work through. If you really want to go small, and, you know, the size of the arteriotomy certainly can increase your chance of having complications. You can just use the inner cannula, which is 2.9 French dilator only. So if you think you're only needing wire access and don't need catheter support, you can choose to do that to really minimize the size of the puncture site. They do make a special pedal access kit, which is essentially this with just a shorter needle and a shorter catheter. And, of course, other companies are developing their own access kits. Some people advocate doing a sheathless access. So once you have a needle and an 018 wire access, not to advance a sheath and just use the wire to get across the lesion. I think this is probably a mistake because you lose your ability to shoot an angiogram via the foot. It's nice to know that you're intraluminal. It's nice to map the anatomy from below. And again, you can still have a low profile access into the pedal circulation. And then crossing the lesion is just as you would cross the lesion normally. Some people feel that the back end of these lesions are filled with thrombus. This is, I think, a theoretical advantage of the retrograde approach in that you're more likely to stay intraluminal. As we all know, it's very difficult to salvage a subintimal tibial crossing. So my preference is to use a hydrophilic wire, although anything, people have had success with just about every wire catheter combination system. And then I usually use a hydrophilic wire and then some sort of catheter support system. My preference is the CXI only because they have these 65-centimeter catheters with straight and angled tips, which really makes a manipulation off the back end of the table a lot easier. And, of course, there are CTO catheters like the Vions that you can run up through the access sheath as well. I think one key is to use exchange-length wires, particularly if you have contralateral femoral access, because ideally you'd like to deliver the wire through and through, and it's frustrating to get across with a 180-centimeter wire and not be able to perform a wire exchange. And then once you get across, it's the treatment is, as per usual, you can either go sheathless, run a balloon, bareback over the wire up the foot. This is not something that we typically do. We prefer to transfer wire access to the femoral sheath, and this will allow you to maintain wire access across the puncture site and help manage puncture site complications. It's actually relatively easy to mate the wire to the femoral catheter. The best way to do it is to use a straight 035 catheter and to position it in a constrained space, usually in the proximal tibial or in the distal popliteal, and then you just steer your pedal wire up into the straight catheter and deliver it out of the working space. Again, an exchange-length wire really helps facilitate this. If you're really in trouble, you can snare it from the femoral sheath and deliver it out. And then finally, through-and-through wire access was what we used in that case that we presented because we had a really long chronic total occlusion that was heavily calcified. Even an over-the-wire balloon catheter can be difficult to push through it, especially if you have contralateral femoral approach. And so sometimes it is advantageous to maintain through-and-through wire access, the quote-unquote body floss, in order to track the balloon over it. Let's say you get subintimal and you have trouble crossing the lesion. You can use a balloon fracture technique to re-enter the space. So if you have intraluminal wire position in the popliteal artery and you're subintimal coming up to the trifurcation, you position a balloon intraluminal from above, subintimal from below with the tips adjacent to each other. Inflating it will create a fracture plane, and then you drive the wire up through and then perform the wire delivery out the femoral sheath. In cartoon diagram, this is obviously a very simple idea. In practice, it actually takes a fair amount of patience, and it can be difficult to establish where that fracture plane is to get through it, again, facilitated with a hydrophilic wire. So how do we manage the puncture site? So after we do our intervention, especially for the pedal access sites, you can simply pull the sheath and use digital pressure for about 10 minutes. Always do a completion angiogram to evaluate the puncture site. Often you're going to need to selectively cannulate it and inject nitroglycerin to relieve spasm. Let's say you do a puncture above the malleolus in the distal anterior tibial, posterior tibial. Obviously, you can't digitally compress that vessel because it's so deep. That is when you would want to do an intra-arterial low-pressure balloon inflation to gain access. So you get your wire across the puncture site, inflate the balloon. You can also inflate a blood pressure cup around the leg and maintain that for 5 minutes, and then shoot a completion angiogram, and hopefully you're hemostatic. So how does it fare? This is a salvage technique and not something that's necessarily studied rigorously, and most of the literature is out of interventionalists, not necessarily vascular surgeons. And virtually everything is a case report, a case series. You can see for the first decade and a half or so, the number of cases reported were awfully small. Everybody reported technical success. Obviously, there's a reporting bias here. If you had a horrible complication, you're not going to submit your case series for presentation. A lot of people didn't even bother to remark on their complication rate since this is really a technical issue. And as we get more recent here, you can see some larger series being reported with, I think, probably a more realistic technical success rate on the order of 80 to 90%. And to the credit of these two groups, maybe the only ones courageous enough or brave enough to actually look at the long-term results, they had some pretty significant complications. So what can you conclude by looking at this? Well, you can conclude that the technique is feasible, but really there's outstanding questions about patient selection and the fate of the puncture site. When you puncture anything, you can have some complications. Femoral puncture is about 5%. Dissection is not that common, about 1% to 2%. But if you routinely look with ultrasound, you can see it. Obviously, if you're puncturing a 2-millimeter pedal vessel, a small dissection flap can have large hemodynamic consequences. As you work in more diseased arteries and smaller arteries, the complication rate increases. Retrograde popliteal punctures have a 10% complication rate. It's more likely to happen if it's a calcified vessel or patients with end-stage renal disease, which is typically who you would be using this procedure for. And from the cardiac literature, radial access in the long term, while it's great for procedural success, if you look, you will see great rates of radial artery occlusion. Usually these patients don't have significant hand ischemia because of the collateral ulnar circulation, but radial artery occlusion can happen anywhere between 5 to 12% of radial access cases. And predictors are small artery diameter, large sheath, diabetes, smoking, PAD, and gender. Again, this is your patient population. So should we assume that the pedal access will be any different, and should we assume that the consequences would be any worse? I think you should assume that it would be some rate of complication. Even if it's low, the consequences could be rather dire, especially if the sole runoff to the foot. Unfortunately, there really isn't much in the way in the public domain about the mid or long-term results about how the puncture site does. So the fate of the puncture site is basically unknown. The two reports that I mentioned earlier, Montero Baker had 47 patients with critical ischemia. They had one axis site thrombosis, but that required an emergency pedal bypass. So you can see the stakes are pretty high if you fail. This most recent publication, which was a third rest pain, two-thirds tissue loss, had one axis site thrombosis salvaged with angiograde angioplasty. But if they looked at their two-month outcomes, and within 2 months, they had three urgent bypass operations and eight major unplanned amputations out of a group of 51 patients. So, what happened between point A and point B is unknown. It might speak to the durability and the benefit of doing a procedure like this in people with advanced ischemia and limb-threatening ischemia. But if you have a complication at your puncture site, you're going to make things a lot worse. So getting back to what it adds, it really adds pushability, another attempt at salvaging a failed crossing and reestablishing interliminal position. But the risk can be high. You can lose critical runoff into the foot. Failed crossing may be even worse. So if you puncture the foot, you can't get across the lesion, you don't revascularize, and then you pull the sheath, you really can be in a bad situation. And I don't think you can assume that you're going to have a 100% technical success rate when you use this procedure. So patient selection. So who would I use it for, and who do I use it for? Really, obviously, limb-threatening ischemia and infragenicular disease. And really, I have to be committed to an endovascular intervention for one reason or another. Soft tissue concerns, venous ulcers, scleroderma, x-ray therapy, no conduit availability, a prohibitive surgical risk, and I've failed an antegrade crossing. I think if you meet these criteria, then I would consider it, but you're going to incur a pretty substantial risk if you don't pull it off. And then for patients who I think it's a bad idea, obviously a claudicant with one vessel runoff, this is a horrible idea, or patients with active foot infection. And I put isolated SFA disease because there's so many other good ways to treat that I don't think a retrograde pedal access should be on that list. And then finally, patient selection anatomy. It just in cartoon format. I mean, these are the types of lesions that you can always get through antegrade because there's a little stump you can work with. It's a reasonable length occlusion. But as you get flush occlusions and you can't engage, or you have occlusions that involve the trifurcation where you have to steer across into another vessel through the occlusion, those can be very difficult to manage in the antegrade fashion. And again, whether you should be doing this or not, I think is it's something you should consider, but if you're going to do it, this is where it would be most useful. So in conclusion, it is a feasible technique. It does increase your rate of technical success because it gives you another crack at it, but it really should be reserved for salvaging a failed antegrade crossing. And though the complications appear to be infrequent, it can be rather dire. And my guess is it's probably underreported. And there's obviously outstanding questions about the long-term fate of the puncture site. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.